This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought to you by Bluehost, one of the best solutions in the world for your blog or website. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. And by the Amazon Store. Click on the link on our website before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
I don't have any other choice. As long as there are other people in our lives, you can never fully be mine. You loved me once. With them gone, you'll love me again, and you can see me for what I truly am. A hero.
Not if you kill everyone. You're a villain.
Me? They're the ones that have been keeping us apart. They're the villains.
How could I ever love anybody who would do such horrible things? Why would you even tell me this?
Because I don't have anyone else to talk to.
I'm gonna stop you.
Everything I just said will come to pass.
Never. Why would I let you do any of this?
Because you won't remember a thing.
Welcome back to a brand new episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. And today we're going to be talking about the 19th episode of the second season called The Evil Queen. And joining me today to discuss this episode are the usual suspects, or at least most of them. David couldn't make it today, but I have Inge, Shelley, Lisa, and Deborah on the line. Welcome.
Hello, Father.
Good afternoon.
Let's start right away, as usual, with the first question that I always ask, and that is first initial thoughts, initial reactions. What did you think of the episode? Let's start with Deborah this time.
Oh, I like this much better than Lacey. You know what I did immediately after watching, you know, Once Upon a Time, you know, I was watching it live this week. And they did do the 10-minute preview. I was like, oh, and I was probably one of the first people to like get on that and go watch the 10-minute preview for the next episode. I couldn't wait. And I still can't wait until next week.
And don't tell, I haven't seen it.
No. And that's the thing. I'm like, oh boy, at what point did I stop watching the other episode and the other, you know? So if I start giving spoilers away, then
we will mute you.
Somebody shut me up.
We will kick you out. We will activate the fallback switch and zap you back to Neverland or whatever.
Disneyland.
But yeah, I really love what they've done with Regina in this episode.
What about you, Inge?
Well, I had some problems with this episode. And it's not the acting, but it's just the storyline. When I was watching, I was like, on what planet does Regina live? You know, because...
What do you mean?
Well, if I kill everybody, I will be the hero. I was like, huh? And then tell Henry that you're going to blow up the entire town. And what do you expect? That he will applaud you? Of course he's... So... And also, when Snow basically shares that the reason she's so good is not her mother, but Regina, she just decides to kill her anyway. And Snow is probably the only person in Fairytale Land who actually cares for her besides her father. So that it didn't make sense to me.
Good points. We'll talk about that in the rest of this podcast a little bit more in depth. But first of all, let me go to Shelley. What did you think of the episode?
I really like the character development of Regina. And I thought it was another incredible writing skill of parallelism between the Storybrooke world with the Enchanted Forest world. We really get to see how much damage Cora has done to Regina and what a twisted view of love she has. And I kind of disagree with Inge a little bit in that I thought it was really ironic and a good use of the writer. I mean, the way the writer wrote this, I can't talk today, that we see how people are connected and how the tiniest, littlest things you do. We know it was all manipulated by Cora, but Regina saving Snow on that horse sparked so much more than just what launched her into the path of Snow's father, who's King Leopold. It changed Snow too. And in a way, without even knowing it, right then, Regina was the hero.
Yeah. Good point. What about you, Lisa?
There was one part that I really enjoyed seeing that we haven't seen in a really long time, and it was Emma and Henry together when they decided to bring back Operation Cobra. And you know, she came up with a new name, and I liked seeing them work together. That's kind of where we were in the very first season, that chemistry between them, the developing trust. And I really liked seeing them, you know, do it again. That was a lot of fun. And my other part that I really enjoyed seeing Regina in Fairy Tale World, seeing her vulnerable and seeing how Snow treated her. But there were a couple other parts that, but for those two, it was definitely worth it.
Excellent. I thought this episode was a bit slower than the previous ones. Even though I do appreciate the effort to give us a little bit more insight in how evil the Evil Queen truly was, I still felt that most of what was in this episode, most of the elements were things that we have already seen in previous seasons. So there wasn't much surprise. There wasn't much in this episode that I think make this series so good, and that is that it can just put things upside down, and you're like, what? Wait a minute. And I was expecting things to happen all the time, especially with some kind of discovery in Neil's room, and when they lift up the piece of the wooden floor, I was like, now we're going to get the big reveal, and there's nothing there. And the same thing with when they go down the elevator shaft and Regina pushes Hook in, and we see this monstrous zombie-like version of Maleficent. I'm waiting for something big and important to happen and something spectacular, and instead we switch to Regina and she just, you know, gets some kind of a purple gem from Snow White's coffin, and I was like,
In that respect, this was kind of almost a filler. They're moving the story along. Yes. They had things, elements that they wanted to make sure we knew. And like Lisa said, this was very much a nod to what made the show great in the beginning. Very vibrant colors, very solid blue and red, distinguishing between the good and the evil. All the Snow Charming, the dwarf, Grumpy, they were all in these muted shades of purple for the magic. It really did True. Have that feel from the first five or six episodes of the first season.
True, and I almost feel as if this episode was planned to bring people up to speed. And regardless of what we've seen in, you know, some of the previous episodes, this is what you need to know to be able to understand the finale and what's at stake there. And so we get the main, almost like a recap of the main ingredients of what will be the solution or the dissolution of the series or of the story so far. And so we know now that there is a big threat, and that is the destruction of Storybrooke. That is something that we need to know. We know that most people want to go back to the Enchanted Forest, including Henry. Everybody seems to be on board with that. And we know that the main villain, again, is the Evil Queen. And, of course, Rumpelstiltskin in the background, who is manipulating everything. But that's about it. That's all we needed to know. And I guess that the next two episodes are going to be really, really good and action-packed and will probably make me forget about this episode a little bit more. But I do agree
I want to offer a side there to you, Father, that they also open the door to show you that while Regina is evil, Regina desperately wants to be the hero. She desperately wants love.
She wants redemption.
She desperately wants to have the opportunity to be changed.
Yes.
But she doesn't know how.
Yes.
She's got that warped sense. That's right.
It's, I think,
and they need you to know that, because I really got the feeling that the villain, the real villain, is Tamara and Greg. That's where they're going with this. I'm my guess. I'm not a spoiler. I haven't read any spoilers. That's where they're going with the next two episodes. That's where they're going with season three.
Interesting. Let's talk about that later on a little bit more.
Also what Father said about, bringing people up to speed and prepping them for the finale. Well, the writers didn't get rewarded for that, because the series hit an all-time low in the ratings. So I think it was had a 2.0 share and only 7 million people watched.
That's not very good. Still a lot of people, but it's a bit disappointing for a series that should work towards a huge cliffhanger or whatever it is. You want the series to end on a high and not on a low, at least when it comes to ratings.
Are they committed to a season 3?
Yes.
I think they are, yes.
I think they've started filming.
Now that I saw an article, mm-hmm. and they have a production date, start date for production for season 3.
Okay. Well, and then, of course, with this series, there are plenty of opportunities to pick this up again and to make it a little bit better and to get people back on board. It all depends on what they do with the third season, but I feel that it's time now for a big change. Like I said last week, and it was confirmed this week again, it's like, stop with the rain. Get out of Canada. Come on. Give us something different.
I don't remember it raining.
Oh, it was pouring. They were sitting in that yellow beetle, and it's...
Oh, yeah. Oh,
there was so much rain that you could hardly see Henry.
That's funny.
But something needs to happen. Well,
that just helps their surveillance.
I guess so.
That was so cute, though. Like Lisa mentioned, I mean, that was so cute. The two of them staking out it, like it was just like the Manhattan episode, not Manhattan, the Tallahassee episode where Emma and Neil. That's how they got together, and they were, you know, same thing, sitting in that same car, you know, staking out, and then funniest moment in the whole show is her inside the hotel room. And Henry's standing out there, and he's trying to kick the door without looking like he's trying to kick the door. And, and Neil's like, oh, heck no, I taught her that.
Get out there. That was a bit, that was not very smart to use that trick.
Awesome.
Let's go back to the beginning of the story and listen to a sound clip about Regina talking to Hook.
Escape plan. Oh, she'd have loved that. She brought that giant for the beans, so she could go back and start over with you.
Now I'm going to do that with Henry. If you'll help me. This is how we're going to escape the total destruction of Storybrooke. If I could trust you.
Now, when you say total destruction, including the crocodile, yes?
Oh, yes. Rumpelstiltskin will die. If you help me.
And that, of course, is the hook for Hook to be on board, to use a lot of metaphors there that fit his character. But the complete destruction of Storybrooke, including the crocodile, everyone else dies. She tells Henry this in I think, a pretty shocking scene. I wondered the same thing that Henry was wondering. Why do you tell me this? And I still don't really understand. It's like, well, I'll make you forget. But still, why does she want...
It's like a loaded gun thing. So she's going to use wipe other people's memories, and we need to show... It needs to be shown first.
Oh, you mean it's another story element so that they can...
This is definitely a story element. This is used by the writers to show you a couple of different things. Mm-hmm. The first one is they're giving you insight into what she's planning. There's no other easy way for you to find out that she's got this trigger and she can reset it and she can destroy Storybrooke and it will kill everyone in there, which is going to be important, my guess, for the big finale. Mm-hmm. Will they, won't they destroy Storybrooke? The second thing they're telling you is when he says, why are you telling me this? She says, because I don't have anyone else to talk to. They're showing you how lonely she is, how isolated. She's lost her mother. She's lost her son. She's desperate for love. And so they've used this element here. And then possibly the third to show that she does have the magic to remove a memory, which could come into play later if they need to use it.
True. And still it felt a bit... contrived and a bit superfluous, and I understand that
very forced.
might be necessary, but it was so weird. And by now, she must know Henry a little bit. She must know that he's probably not gonna like this plan.
But did you notice he didn't like completely forget?
Oh, true. I don't know why.
Yeah, I didn't like it. It felt weird, and it just the whole time it was, you know, she was talking. I'm like, what?
The only reason for that scene was to tell you that she's got a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but how do you mean that Henry didn't completely forget?
Well, I wonder, because later when they're doing the stakeout, he says to Emma something about a way back, maybe a bean, maybe. And she's like, smart boy, but I wonder if it wasn't somewhere still in his mind. That there, because Regina had shown him the beans and said that they're going to take you. So I wondered if that was another tweak of something that they were, you know, showing us. That will be important.
Like what they said in the last episode, that the magic is not watertight. So also curses are not watertight, and apparently magic spells aren't watertight either.
It's in there somewhere. So,
yeah. But if I had to bet, I would bet they wrote that scene in to set up her taking Hook down into the cavern to get the trigger.
Right, right. And they needed somehow to convey us that. And
that's why it felt so disjointed.
Well, go ahead, Deborah.
No, I guess I wasn't watching very closely, because I was thinking, well, I thought that was kind of a fantasy she was having with Henry. And then she saw Henry and was like, oh, okay, well, this is what we're doing. So it's not like she really told Henry, I thought. Maybe I just watched that scene incorrectly.
The plan to destroy Storybrooke seems to be a parallel to what has already happened in this first flashback scene that we get to see, where Regina is looking for Snow White, and then when nobody in the village wants to help her, she does the very scary Emperor Palpatine-like thing, where, like, kill them, all of them.
No mercy.
Wipe them out, all of them. That's the Palpatine quote. But, but and it's gruesome, and I did not expect us to actually see the result of that order, but we see it towards the end, and it's a pretty shocking scene. It's, wow. It's gruesome.
It made me think, what does she want to reach with this? So you murder an entire village because they don't want to betray Snow White. And so how do you think that's going to work? Will other people love you for that?
No, but I think that's a problem. It's not really that she doesn't really have a plan. It's just revenge. She just wants to smack people back because they don't respect her. And constantly
she's
in this episode, she's losing her grip on reality, and she's even jeopardizing her own evil plans because she's just
lashing out.
There's no
logic to what she's doing. She just lashes out with emotion.
Yeah, this is the most evil she is. This is the pain of everything that's happened with her mother and losing Daniel and falling in with Rumpel. And Rumpel is feeding it, remember, because Rumpel needs Regina to cast the curse. He needs her as broken as she can possibly be. And so she's being manipulated so much that this is the beginning of the lowest point for her. I mean, this is very early in the timeline, in that King Leopold is probably within the last month or two or six died, and she's sent the huntsman after Snow, because Snow's been hiding out, but Snow hasn't met Charming yet.
No.
This is that period of time between Snow running off and Snow meeting Charming.
Yeah.
Did you notice the reference she makes to probably to Robin Hood?
Yes. No, I caught that
I didn't
too.
Catch that.
She's saying she doesn't mind shooting the arrow or killing the livestock. And Regina says, but you don't know how to do that. Well, wait, but I mean, you were a princess, so of course you wouldn't know how to hunt. And she goes, somebody in another forest taught me.
Long story.
Interesting. So that we might get to see a backstory perhaps next year about her and Robin Hood. Who knows? Let's go back to the theme of revenge. It's blinding Regina. It makes her act in a lot illogical way, and it's gruesome what she does. Hook seems to be a little bit more in control. He too is motivated by revenge, but I think he's a little bit more, let's say, deliberate in the way he wants to make sure that he gets his revenge. He's not as emotional as Regina, as far as I can tell.
You ever wonder if this constant pursuit for revenge is the reason we've no one who cares for us? I mean, when all this is over and I know the crocodile is dead for good and all, I'll have nothing to look forward to. My life will be empty. Revenge may sate your being, but don't misunderstand me, my dear. It's an end, not a beginning.
For you, maybe, not me. I have Henry. And destroying Storybrooke, well, that seems like a small price to pay to allow us to live in peace.
I wonder why he says that. That, it, you know, revenge is just the end. And after that, there's nothing to look forward to. Go ahead.
I'd say maybe because that's all he's focused on for so long. He's lost everything, too. You know, he doesn't have anything. And so maybe he realizes that that's the only point to his life. And when that's done, when that revenge is taken, then what? He has nothing more to.
And in a way, he already experienced that feeling because he was convinced that he had killed Mr. Gold, Rumpelstiltskin. And so he, when we first see him in the beginning of this episode, he is a bit like, "Yeah, I've been there, done that. I'm done." Yeah. But he doesn't seem to have much purpose anymore. It's almost as
and
if.
Keep in mind that Hook is the second longest or the second oldest character there. He has been around as long as Rumpel before he was the Dark One. So the two of them, as far as we're aware of, are the only ones that have lived the hundreds of years that we don't know how many.
That's true.
Of this whole story, of all the characters.
He's been doing this a long time.
That's a very long time to be stuck in the same mindset and always searching. And revenge leaves you empty. There's nothing there. There's nothing left. It's a hollow shell. You do it, and then what? And the first thing
back.
That came to my mind was The Princess Bride and Inigo Montoya. At the end, he says, "I've been in the revenge business so long, I don't know what else to do."
That's inconceivable. But the thing is, for him, it's really over when he kills Rumpelstiltskin. He's even, and then what? We don't really know. For Regina, of course, she still believes that getting revenge is going to wipe her slate clean, and then she can make a new start, and she'll have Henry again, and no one else to interfere. So I guess that's still she has a goal. Her ultimate goal is perhaps not revenge. It is to be reunited with Henry and to be loved. And revenge is a tool that she uses to get there. It's a wrong tool, of course. But I think with Hook, I don't see that motivation. I mean, he wants to kill Rumpelstiltskin, but why? Probably for very selfish motives. He just wants.
I think for him, for Hook, it's justice, mm-hmm. Because Hook has killed of Rumpel has killed Mila,
mm-hmm.
And the one woman he truly loved, and so because she was taken away from him by the crocodiles. He wants to kind of revenge. How you say that? Get justice for Mila. That's how I explain it.
Well, I think, yes, I agree with that partially too. And one of my thoughts was that he also has his wounded pride, because here's a guy, you know, he looked down on the crocodile who was, in his mind, a weakling, you know, somebody less than, less than human. And here he's bested him on almost every turn. So now he needs to prove to himself that he is better than the crocodile.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with the love issue, because that's kind of the same thing that motivated Regina. Regina didn't really truly have her mother's love, but she had her father's, and she had Daniel's, and her mother ripped out Daniel's heart and crushed it. And that's the same that we saw Rumpel rip out Mila's heart right in front of Hook,
mm-hmm.
who then I guess was Killian Jones, and crush it. And so in a way, he and Regina are very similar. They've both had love, and they've both watched it be completely destroyed, and they're both out for revenge. The difference is Regina wants love, and she's in this misguided way of trying to get it, and Hook is just after the revenge for losing his true love, so to speak, and he has nothing else after that.
Yeah.
But
It's almost as if Hook has given up on love. It's like the one he loved is gone, and so there is no future for him, literally. Mm-hmm. Just
there's something
just some kind
that Snow
peace.
Says that's so amazing. She says that to Regina she wanted revenge more than she wanted love. And I can't imagine living that way. But that's the same way that Regina was brought up.
It's the same way that Gold Rumpelstiltskin has been, though. He wants power and magic more than he wants love.
Right. I mean, so all of these, they're guided, they're missing out on love because they're so focused on something that has no room for love. Snow says she wants to be guided by love. And she tells Regina, not knowing it's Regina, that if she wanted to change, if she wanted to be a family, if she wanted to be good, I would really love to have her back in my life as a family. I would love her. And Regina is just overwhelmed by that. And oops, then they come across the
yeah, that was this little thing with the 400 villagers
oops,
that I had killed.
Completely. I mean, boom. And she sees the effect that has on Snow.
Well, yeah. Obviously. That brings us back to the part of the story where Regina is in disguise and she mingles in with the crowd. And in order to be able to do that effectively, she needs magic from Rumpelstiltskin. First, she wants Rumpel to teach her the transformation spell. But Rumpel is like, oh, you're not a very good student. I like the little quip about, you know, in 2 weeks from now, you might be able to change your hair a little bit.
Your mother months. What are you talking about? You're just going to learn it overnight.
But we know she learned it because she did it in Storybrooke.
Yeah.
I didn't remember. When did
so
she
the
do
fisherman
that?
Who was mending his nets, that was Regina in disguise.
Oh, okay.
When in the docks.
Oh,
when,
true. Yes. Yeah. But that was the first time that we saw her doing that.
I think it is. Yeah.
Cora did it all the time.
She has learned it.
Hmm.
We saw her mother do it a whole lot.
Yeah, you wonder why she hasn't used it more
often. I also
often.
Think that at one point Henry is rescued from the vipers by Charming, but the way Charming acts, and I think that was
that's
also
that's true. Yeah,
Regina
we had that theory that it might be Regina instead of a Charming.
Right.
Good point. Of course, the solution is that. She gets a temporary makeover, and that's about it. And she won't be able to use magic while she is in disguise. And then she, there's this whole scene in the courtyard where, it's the courtyard on a marketplace where she discovers how much the people hate her. And she tries to intervene. And then again, it's almost naive. She totally doesn't realize that the soldiers don't really see. The same person that she is seeing.
She forgets herself entirely.
She is like, but it's me, the evil queen.
It's a very Aladdin kind of theme or scene, like where, but you know, unfortunately backfired for her, but it worked for Jasmine.
Remind me of that
off
scene.
Her head and like, yeah. And they're like, what?
I love that she puts up her hands. Like she's going to do something.
Can you give me a recap of that? Because it's been such a long time since I watched that movie, Deborah.
Oh, Aladdin? It's like the very
no, I mean, the disguise thing?
The what?
The disguise thing? When does that happen?
Oh, well, in Aladdin or in the show?
In Aladdin.
Oh, okay. In Aladdin. So Princess Jasmine is tired of being, you know, cooped up in the palace. So she goes out. She disguises herself and runs away. And she puts on this little, you know, hooded, you know, cloak kind of thing and goes out in the marketplace and meets Aladdin. But she's also getting herself into trouble because, you know, as a princess, she's never had to worry about money or anything like that. So she's, you know, basically stealing, you know, fruit to give to the poor. And she doesn't realize she has to pay for it and she has no money. So the guards are, you know, called on her and then. Aladdin saves her, but then they're more interested in Aladdin, and they're like, oh, we're going to take him away. And she's like, stop. And she reveals herself as the princess, and, you know, and they're like,
yeah, she just takes the scarf off her head, just like Regina did in this.
Yeah,
almost exactly. They recognize her as the princess, but not Regina.
Yeah.
So this might actually be almost a direct reference to Aladdin, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
It's very similar.
Yeah.
So, but what is her ultimate plan to do that? Because that, I think I missed that. It was like, what does she wants to do? What does she tries to accomplish by disguising herself and just going amongst her people?
She doesn't understand why they don't love her. She offered them a fortune to give up Snow White, and they stood there and were slaughtered. They wouldn't. And so she keeps saying, why are they loyal to me? Why not, I mean, to her. Why aren't they loyal to me? I'm the queen. And right. Rumpel's just laughing. I mean, he's like, you know, well, maybe they call you the evil queen. Well, but I'm not evil. She's the evil one. sorry. They're her people. You're just going to have to, you know, be content with fear, because they're never going to love you. Well, no, yes, they are. Yes, they are. Because when Snow is dead, then they'll see my kindness. And you're sitting there going, huh?
And you know, I understand why they did it. But at the same time, it felt just a little, you know, not. It just wasn't authentic. I mean, I don't know. It's like they were just trying to find a reason to get her in disguise with Snow to have all that heartfelt stuff that we liked.
I think so, yes.
I just thought it was a little. It was a little, I don't know what you call it, formula or over the top.
Mm-hmm. You know what bugged me about this scene? She is so almost dumb. Or you say
she
acting very dim
too.
Throughout the whole entire episode. And we also know her as being very clever, being always one step ahead of Snow Wars. So it's almost like that she's two people, two different, because how can you be smart and dim at the same time?
Two things there, Inga. The first one is that they've got to show, this is Regina's first time to see Snow since she kicked her out and had the huntsman allegedly run and kill her. So this is the first time that the two of them have come face to face again. And the second thing is they had to have her be dumb and get captured very, very quickly because they only have, a 42-minute air show without the commercials in it, 43. So they've got to compress that part into it as much so they can spend a lot more dialogue time elaborating on the whole, how Regina rescued Snow, but that in turn saved her and made her realize that what her mother said, she'd been grieving the loss of her mother, that what her mother said about being good could be real. It wasn't just something to strive for. It was something that people could really, truly be selfless, genuinely selfless, and love each other. It wasn't just mom told me to be good in my heart, but this woman proved she was right. And that's what changed Snow's whole outlook, seeing that pure, selfless love that Regina had then, but doesn't have now.
Let's listen to a short sound clip of exactly of that conversation between Regina and Snow.
When I was younger, the horse I was riding ran away with me. I was about to be thrown. I would have been killed. This woman, she had no idea who I was. She came charging after me. She saved me. She risked her own life and changed me. My mother always told me to keep goodness in my heart, and this woman proved that she was right. It taught me that there can be this genuine, selfless connection between people, even strangers.
Yes, and then Regina asks Snow, "But what happened to the stranger?" And then Snow says, "The stranger is gone, but I hope she comes back again." So there is this constant attitude, like there might still be good in her. She might convert. There is hope, and that hope is completely destroyed when she sees the destruction in the village and how basically it's almost harkens back to the Second World War scenes with the horrible massacres there, where it's like there can't be any good, and someone who does that cannot be saved. It's basically she burned old bridges there.
Yeah.
It's very dramatic because you see the lingering the desperation almost in Regina's eyes. She love me, you know, save me, bring me back, and yet she has done everything to make that impossible for people to love her. And she doesn't get it. And perhaps I agree with Inge. It feels a bit too, almost as if she's too naive. And it's not the kind of Regina that we've seen previously. And even though, you know, there are some differences in the timeline, I think for most people that are watching this, it's basically like, what are the writers doing? It feels too contrived. And perhaps they could have explained these same, or tell the same story, but in a better, more believable way. This was pushing the limit of what I was ready to, you know, to take in. It's like, I cannot believe that Regina is acting like this. I understand what the writers are doing, but the fact that I'm even aware of that, the writers are trying to tell me something, to me is a sign that this is not the best written episode, because you should not be aware of that kind of stuff. It's almost as if I'm trying to, you know, accommodate the writers. Of course, they had to make it this contrived because otherwise they didn't have enough time to tell us this. Well, come on. That's not the way TV should work.
It does provide some background, because at one point you have Regina doing terrible things, and then Snow forgives her. And she does something terrible again, and Snow forgives her again. And I was like, come on, Snow, why are you doing that? And we now get the explanation for that.
Yes, I liked that moment. True. I liked Snow telling her and watching Regina's face. I thought that scene together of the two of them with Snow nursing her back to health, I thought that was extremely well done. I just didn't care for the, you know, how we got there, mm-hmm. you know, but I really liked the two of them. Just, gosh, they have great chemistry together.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I was wondering when we saw her transformation, or at least the result of the transformation in the mirror, at first I was a bit confused. I was like, is she supposed to be someone I know? Or it's just some random girl?
She looked a lot like Snow.
That's what I was thinking. It's like, is she now supposed to go undercover as Snow White? Wait a minute. It was a bit confusing.
I wondered if they used her same wig.
Hmm. Could be.
Same Snow wig later.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
It was kind of similar. She did resemble... I mean, I guess the two of them look a lot alike to begin with, but she did resemble with the dark hair and she just had a much younger, plain appearance mm-hmm. about her.
Yeah.
But
they could have been sisters, though.
You think about that when Snow drew her bow and arrow on Regina, and you forget that she's not looking at Regina's face. She's mm-hmm. looking at that young, innocent girl's
yes.
face. And you stop and you think, why couldn't she have done it? Well, first of all,
that's it. Yes,
it's somebody. I mean,
it's a stranger, and
is completely different.
Yeah,
yeah. She, her mind knows it's probably Regina. But I think there's also this doubt in her heart. What if it's not Regina? I'm not going to kill an innocent person. So mm-hmm. Her mind and her heart are in conflict there, and I think that's why she waits so long. The trigger.
And she had enough time trying to kill Regina when she knew it was Regina. So
I found it fascinating that, you know, here Regina had every opportunity to kill Snow, had the sword in her hand, and she just didn't know how to use it. She just didn't know.
Do you think that's what it was? Or do you think she was conflicted with all the emotions she had felt?
That's how I was reading the scene, yes. That she had an opportunity, but she didn't take the opportunity because she was still struggling. Should I do this?
Because they just been through a lot together.
And Snow, you saw her head cock, so you know she heard it.
Mm-hmm.
She heard the
yes,
slide.
Yes.
But what about the name? She gave the name of Wilma.
Wilma, yes.
Wilma,
Flintstones.
That's what I thought. First
no.
I thought. But
it's a Dutch name originally, Wilhelmina.
What does it mean?
It means helmet or protection.
Female version of Wilhelm, of William.
Yeah. So
that's not a very common name for us.
And
you don't hear that. So
I know several Wilmas. Yeah.
It's a very common name, and it's a kind of an old fashioned name in Holland. Or it's not used that much, but I know a few Wilmas. But I think for most American viewers, it's probably Fred Flintstone.
Yeah, that was reference. About it for me. I did kind of go, well, that's odd.
Well, I guess if she says, if you look at the meaning of the name, and it's like the helmet protection, it could refer to this disguise. She is someone else under the protection of this outer appearance. But I didn't. I can't think of any other explanation for this name.
Well, of course, she's the evil queen, and of course, William, and also the female version, Wilhelmina, is just a queen's name. So maybe
that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
We are Wilhelmina was the queen's business, king's business today here in the Netherlands.
In the Netherlands, we just got the queen abdicated, and her son is now the king. But if you go back a few generations, then the queen was called Wilhelmina. So, but she wasn't an evil queen. She was a good queen.
Yeah, that's still a royal name.
Oh, speaking of, did you catch the price of the magic that Rumpel gives her when he cloaks her in the spell?
Forgot about that.
The price was for her to cut off all trade with King George's realm. And she's like, King George? Why? He says, well, I need him bankrupt. Did you get it? He needs George bankrupt.
Because now I understand.
King George's realm goes bankrupt. And then is forced to seek an alliance with King Midas.
Exactly.
And James is supposed to slay the dragon, but James dies. So they bring in twin brother, David. He kills the dragon. He gets engaged to Midas's daughter and he meets Snow. And Rumpel needs all of these little pieces to happen so that Regina will cast the curse.
Wow.
So that Snow and David's daughter will break it so that then Rumpel can be reunited with Bay.
It's incredible.
My head hurts.
But it's almost as if Rumpelstiltskin. It's almost as if Rumpelstiltskin is like the writers. He knows everything, and he just needs to put in all these elements in place so that his story unfolds.
I wonder what their board looks like in their writing room. You know, if they have all of these like arrows to this.
It's going
to
be huge.
I think it's string.
It's a very very big. It will probably look like when you've got these railway stations where a lot of trains get together, and you've got all these different. Branches, probably it'll look like that.
Yeah.
Ultimate puppet master. I mean, and I kept thinking of the puppets in that episode with Jiminy Cricket. Yeah. But he's the ultimate puppet master. It's amazing to see how they pulled it all together.
Yes. And Regina is much, well, she's also thinking ahead, but just probably not that much. And I want to go back to that scene where she kicks Hook into the crevice there and says, you're the distraction. And thereby again betraying Hook for the umpteenth time. And then she's surprised that Hook turns against her.
Right. What a shocker.
It was an interesting choice, I thought, to bring back Maleficent when I read that she would be back. It's like, how are they going to do that? Wasn't she killed? And
that was great.
The what?
I love you in earth tones.
I missed that.
Is that what one of them? Is that what he said to her?
Yes.
Yeah.
I missed that. That's
no wonder she got mad at him.
Physically gone, but there's that essence of her that's still there, and it was kind of like the Lord of the Rings. What are those creatures in the first movie?
The Fellowship Ring of the Rings.
Nazgul.
Nazgul. Yeah. So or that's what made me think of.
It also felt like a scene from The Mummy where you've got all these, creatures materializing from the sand or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it also made me, the sounds she make made me think about a lot like the Wraith, the Wraith that was in Storybrooke at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was like, is she like a Wraith like Philip? And is there maybe a connection? Is she maybe in the same realm kind of as Philip?
Hmm.
That was probably my least favorite part of the show. I just didn't. I felt like giving Hook something to do.
Yes, it was a bit gratuitous. She's turned into a gatekeeper basically in the story. So and then of course the gatekeeper needs to be somehow defeated.
We didn't even get to see that.
That's the problem that I had. It's like, come on, you're giving us all these special effects, and then you switch to Regina, and we never get to see how Hook saved himself.
Elevator, because she went down the elevator with magic. She said, "Oh, I don't need someone to crank me up because I have magic." Well, she got up the elevator somehow without magic and didn't realize it.
I think that's just a slip.
Because they put that thing on her wrist and supposedly then she lost her magic,
true.
Right?
Yeah.
I think you just caught them in a looper.
Or perhaps
it just bothered me. It was like, oh yeah, Hook's feared for his life. There was no real, I don't know.
Nah,
yeah.
It's an elevator that only uses magic to go down and not up.
That's probably it.
Now, I really do think it was just that they tried to cram so much to move the story forward, and they had to introduce that Hook really is in alignment with Tamara and Greg Owen, and they had to move it along to this big finale
planned. I get that they have to do this, the plot development. I just think they could have done it in a better way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was wondering, how is Maleficent still sort of alive? Because what didn't Emma kill the dragon?
Yeah,
but there's some spell, wasn't it?
Yeah, but that's kind of cheap.
Yeah.
And the other question is, how did Hook escape fighting with Maleficent? Because that's also what Regina asked him. How did you survive that? That's the first part. And B, how did you get up there without my help?
Right.
He killed her.
How?
Yeah, she
because
did.
They have something that kills magical creatures.
Oh, you think he used that same device to kill? Oh, that makes sense.
He did say that they have that. You're right. They said that they have a way to kill magical creatures.
So that's how he could kill Maleficent. That explains it.
Although, know how to kill magical creatures, and then at the end he just says, "I like their plan better."
Well, we know he's a pragmatist. He's going to go with whatever works for him.
Well, that's kind of the question that I had. We see him going to Regina as like, well, these two want to basically catch you, but I will be I'll partner up with you if you give me what I want.
You and your mother.
I wonder, he wasn't aware that Cora had died, but I wonder if he was playing Regina, or whether he changed his mind the moment that she kicks him into the abyss. And that's when you're like, okay, let's go with the others then.
Yeah, that's a good question, because you never know with him. He's going to go with whatever works best for himself, and we didn't know yet which way was most beneficial to him.
I think the difference between Hook and Regina is Hook is just like a good sailor. He's fixated on a dot in the distance, and he just makes sure that he takes every route necessary to arrive at that spot he wants to go to. Thanks. He's very determined. But Regina is just she doesn't have this fixated spot on where you steer the ship to, but she just acts and she doesn't have a plan, she wants something, but she doesn't. She doesn't plot it out like Hook does. So she she's not successful like he is.
So yeah, she's too emotional. She's too much like lashing out, and that's why Hook wins in this case.
It's like psychology. You have two kinds of people. You have goal-oriented people, and you have process-oriented people. So people who are very determined to go to a goal and will twist everything to get there, and people who don't really have a goal in mind but just go with the flow, and so
I like that.
Let's talk about the two the other evil people, or presumed evil people, or at least one of them might be evil. Tamara and Greg, and they capture Regina.
So little bitty Owen does grown-up magic of his own now.
It's not magic. Actually, this is something much better. Science.
Which one was she?
She was the queen, the evil queen. But now, here, you're nothing.
And what are you?
I'm just a man. A man on a mission.
And all this just to try to find your father. I already told you I don't know where he is.
Yes, you do. But that's not my mission.
What is?
I'm not telling you.
So that is extremely mysterious and enigmatic and made me wonder what is really going on. So we learn that we learn two important things. First of all, he's not using magic, he's using science. And
that's
the cuff. The second thing is, he is not on a mission to find his father. He's on a different mission. So yeah, what is going
that,
on?
That happened.
Let's go. let's go to the first element first.
With
let's first talk about the science and the cuff. So apparently this cuff is filled with whatever electronics, and it prevents magic from happening. What? Where did they get that story element? What do you think is going on? I mean, when I think the element of science, when I think science, I think whale, because
we're almost gonna be stumbling into spoiler territory with this thread.
Okay,
don't get to talk.
Let's first speculate. Let's speculate
because in the first 10 minutes, of the next episode, there's a few clues to their purpose.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that. When we do our spoiler break at the end of the episode.
All right,
episode.
I'm going to put myself on mute.
First of all, don't worry.
That's why I didn't
I was thinking the only other moment that we've seen the tension between science and magic was in the whole backstory of Dr. Will and him being, you know, Frankenstein and whatever. And there, I remember that there was talk about science being able to do things that magic can't. And probably vice versa. So I'm thinking, is this going to be a way to bring us back to that theme somehow? Will Will be involved? However, we haven't seen him for a while. So how is that going to work out? And I was also wondering, how do they put technology in that wristband? That doesn't.
It's kind of a bent iPhone watch thing.
So it's something, it's like a Wi-Fi inhibitor or something?
Yeah, something like
metals
that.
Metals and machinery that counteracted every magic bone in your body. I didn't know magic was in your bones. But
yeah, and then if you remove the leather, it will still work. I was like, I don't understand this. I really don't understand.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a metal cuff, and it has kind of a print stuff. So it has technology in it, inside. Uh-huh. And it has a hook has this cuff from Korra, and they retrofitted, how you say it?
Yeah, that's it.
Retrofitted mm-hmm. it to make it work with their technology, and because Regina would recognize the cuff, she wanted it hit back, and she really insisted on getting it back, and then she put it on, and then she blames Hook for setting her up, but she insisted that she wanted it back, you know? So she did it herself.
Mm-hmm. It made me think of people that wear magnets on their wrist because it puts their bodies more into there's some all-natural, holistic kind of thing with those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they've kind of hinted at Tamara, which to me always sounds like tomorrow, the future. Mm-hmm. They've kind of hinted at, remember when she first appeared and somebody asked her, are you here to... Oh, no, it was August. August said, are you here to take the magic from Storybrooke? And she's, I mean, we've seen her on this quest to identify magic and investigate magic. And maybe she's kind of like the Dr. Whale in that they're trying to take magic away so that they can use it to enhance their science or make themselves more powerful.
Or somehow prove that science is more is stronger, more powerful than magic. And... there might be some tension between, let's say, one realm, the magical realm, and the technological realm, and I don't know. It's interesting.
Remember how Tamara said, "Well, I analyzed the contents of this file, you know,
yes.
with the most sophisticated laboratory known to mankind." Mm-hmm. So she obviously has some access to high tech stuff. So we already speculated that she may be part of a secret society like the Illuminati.
But I love this idea that perhaps she is from the future. Tamara, tomorrow. I mean, that is great as an idea. I mean, that could be a huge twist. Say again?
Maybe also a cyborg?
Ooh, bringing a Battlestar Galactica idea?
No, I don't know.
I hate to say this, but if she's from the future, then that's like jumping the shark for me, and I'm like, oh, no.
Well,
they did it and lost. Who knows?
Maybe she's an alien. It's also possible.
Did you notice how schizo Greg was in that last scene? I mean, on the one hand, he's all serious, and this is better and I'm tough and I'm on a mission. And then, and Tamara's like, which one is she? Oh, yeah. She's the evil queen.
He gets all kinds of
hesitant. Oh, but here you're nothing. But yeah, she's just sort of that evil.
Terry in the chat room has a great remark here. He says, you know, since we're talking stories and fairy tales, and we've seen all sorts of different genres of stories being mixed into the into Once Upon a Time, the stories by H.G. Wells and the ones by Jules Verne are public domain now. And especially the Jules Verne, that's interesting because there is a Disney Jules Verne connection. Yes. With the story of the, what is it, the boat there in Disneyland?
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, or yeah. 2,000, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And Walt himself was a big Jules fan, you know, Verne fan. Mm-hmm. Not only just with, what is it, 80 Day, Around the World in 80 Days is also Jules Verne.
And Jules Verne is very much about it's technological fairy tales. It's like going to the moon, going undersea, going to the center of the earth, all sorts of things that are fantastical stories, but there is a very strong technological slant to all those stories. So that would be interesting, I think,
wouldn't be the first time we've seen it because of the Mary Shelley and the Frankenstein episode.
Exactly. But yeah. Exactly.
Versus fairy tale versus science. Yeah. Oh, I like this.
Yeah. It was the moment where I was sitting up and I was like, finally, we get some meat. We get something that is really genuinely intriguing here. I don't know. But let's wrap up this discussion with the big question, of course. Is Tamara really evil? Who thinks she's evil and why?
I don't think she's evil yet.
Okay.
I think she's the villain.
The villain.
But evil is, we don't know what pain, if anything, has caused her to be evil. Right now, she doesn't seem to be motivated by anything that's evil. She seems to be motivated by power and science and
curiosity.
Well, she killed the dragon, so that was pretty evil.
She wants control.
She did kill the dragon, so we've
that's
seen that
true.
She did something, well, not really human.
She could argue that was in self-defense. She was stealing from him, she was taking from him, and he was about to, like, unload on her, but...
Mm. It's almost as if...
She wasn't really stealing, she had paid for it. It was her money.
I've got the feeling that she is like a messenger almost. She is like this is pure speculation, but I've got the feeling that she's not acting all by herself. There's a bigger plan. There's something. There is a dimension behind her, and whether it's aliens or scientists or whatever, but there has to be something. She it's not logical that she's on a personal quest like we've seen with Regina or Rumpelstiltskin. I think there's something else going on,
That must be clear, because otherwise she doesn't have that. She has loads of money. She has access to a hyper-modern lab, so that she cannot act on her own. It's impossible.
Terry in the chat room says that he thought of Thorndike, a whole series of stories in the 20s about Thorndike. He used science to investigate and sometimes defeat supernatural forces. It's a Pulp Fiction type of story. So... could be interesting.
I was going to say, I think she is evil. I think she's playing everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Including Greg.
I do too.
But why would they introduce an evil character that is still, and I'm looking at IMDb, she's a guest actress. She's not, on the team for a long time. So
maybe she's a red shirt?
A red shirt?
Just with a longer arc than usual. Yeah.
Well, and I haven't, I missed a couple episodes, so I don't know if we brought up that theory that she is the, she's actually one of the fairy's children or grandchildren or something that. The fairy that was a long time ago, but that could be,
be
some motivation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think she's.
We don't even know if fairies have children, but and if so, who is the father?
Yeah.
And then of course we've got Greg, and what could he be referring to? Like, this is not my mission to find my father. That's everything we knew about him, and now it's something else.
That's apparently a side mission.
He doesn't strike me as a bad guy.
I wondered if he was even telling the truth, though. I mean, is he just saying like? No, I'm bigger than that. I'm going to do something else. I mean, was he being truthful?
Oh, I think he was.
I'm not going to tell you.
She's fed him some story to Mara, you know, to make him be part of a bigger purpose. But I don't think so.
He seems to be helping her and protecting her. But I don't know.
I got the impression she wears the pants.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. I also think if you look back on what his behavior, you know, when the whole town disappears. So everybody thinks he's insane when he escapes from Storybrooke, and he knows that what he's seen is real. And then he's recording everything mm-hmm. when he gets from the hospital. So it's like he's really hateful towards magic. So I think he just wants to destroy Regina. That's his ultimate goal, as a revenge for taking his father. But first he wants to have his father back, and then kill everybody who took him away, or
get rid of magic altogether, because magic is what separated him from his father.
Yeah,
could be. Interesting. Well, let's go into our spoiler section right now at the end of the show. Before I do that, I want to say goodbye to our spoiler-free listeners. Thank you for listening to this episode. And, of course, we will be back for the big finale with our in-depth analysis of what's going to happen. I can't wait to discover. And in the meantime, I already want to point you to some other series that we produce over at sqpn.com. Because, of course, after the finale, it's going to be a long wait. And, of course, you want to have something else to fill in the gap. And we have a couple of shows that, if you like this kind of stuff with Once Upon a Time, you might enjoy as well. We've got a series about The Hobbit, and of course that's not really a fairy tale, but it is fantasy. So if you are interested in an in-depth discussion about the Hobbit movies, and especially there's a lot of kind of looking forward to the next two movies, go over to thehobbit.sqpn.com. We also have a series about Disney movies, and you can find that one at disney.sqpn.com. It's basically a very detailed analysis of the classic Disney fairy tales. So I'm pretty sure that there are lots of connections with Once Upon a Time. So you might want to enjoy that too. So that's disney.sqpn.com. And then, of course, we also have a science fiction department and two big franchises that are now helmed by J.J. Abrams are Star Trek and Star Wars. And we are about to relaunch a number of podcasts about those two franchises as well. As you know, Star Wars is gonna be back with a new trilogy and even more movies now that Disney has taken over the franchise from Lucasfilm. So that can all be found and much more on sqpn.com. So already set your iPods or whatever you use, your phones or your computers, to some new feeds, so that we can continue to be in contact with you as a listener and help you bridge the gap between season 2 and season 3 of Once Upon a Time. All right, spoiler territory. We have to keep this very brief because we're already 1 hour into the show. But I guess that the best way to talk about spoilers is by playing a little bit of the audio of the sneak peek that is always given to us as a promo for... Let me just stop this music. I don't know even why I played that. Here's the sound of the sneak peek.
The final episode before the devastating season finale.
Magic, it's unholy.
All new next Sunday, it's evil versus evil and Storybrooke's future.
We're here to destroy it.
We'll take a shocking turn. Plus, the discovery of an incredible new world.
Neverland, it's different from where you came from.
Once Upon a Time, all new next Sunday, 8, 7 Central on ABC. To watch the first 10 minutes of next week's episode, go to abc.com.
Neverland!
Yeah, ooh, Wendy!
It is true! Cool! Mm-hmm. Okay, Deborah, you saw the first 10 minutes.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about it.
And in the first minute, you get to see Wendy Darling. And you see a very young Bay of Fire, and he sneaks in and breaks into the Darling house to steal bread. So you're already like, "Ooh, yay! Here comes Peter Pan!" And but that's the first, you get introduced to the Darling family.
Cool.
And it, ironically, like after I watched this on Sunday night, Disney Channel here in the United States showed Peter Pan, the classic cartoon. So I'm like, oh, yay, I got a...
Nice. Good. That's very nice planning.
So, Deborah, yeah. was it clear that he was not Peter Pan, or he, and he's a lost boy, or is he breaking into the house as Peter Pan?
He's breaking into the house to steal bread. There was no indication that Wendy thought he was Peter Pan, or that Wendy was just being very nice, from what I saw.
Okay. I gotta go watch.
But yeah, there's still. I mean, he introduced himself, and you know, and they started talking, but there wasn't any indication that she thought he was Peter Pan.
Nice.
Maybe, well, that'll be his story, though. We find out what happens to him, and it involves Neverland. So either way.
Mm-hmm.
You also said that these 10 minutes revealed something about this whole technology thing.
Well, you know, none of you watched this. Jeez, am I the only one that I need to know?
I didn't watch it on purpose because I didn't want to spoil the discussion. I'm known for...
We're in spoiler time right now, so you can go ahead and spoil everything.
So you see, you get a flash, kind of a... Now, this is interesting, is that you see Tamara getting up at 6 a.m. and they show the clock purposefully to go for what she says is a run because she's training for the marathon. And so the next scene you see is Emma and Snow and, you know, David breaking into Regina's office to look for her.
Mm-hmm.
And Emma checks the little, you know, she has an alarm system, and they check to see the last time somebody entered, and somebody used an override code at 6 a.m., around 6 a.m., to get into Regina's office. And she's like, well, why would Regina use an override code? And then you notice that Regina had stolen a bean plant and had it in her office. And, mm-hmm. and Emma's like, well, why would she put evidence out where we could see it?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're starting to go, oh, 6 a.m., that's when she went for a run. And so you know immediately who went in there and did all this. And then you get to see what happened to Regina. And I don't really want to spoil it for y'all because it's awesome.
Okay.
they showed a very quick little preview of what looked to me like the Princess Bride, a machine. Like she's hooked up to a machine that sucks the magic out or
she's
sucks the life away.
To a torture machine. She's hooked up to basically what would be kind of like electroshock therapy.
It would be,
so she's wow. She's being tortured. By Greg.
I guess
holy
to give
moly, this to does the, sound like Lost. Gosh.
Yeah, they're gonna take it all twisted now.
and then you realize that Tamara and Greg work for some agency. And they're collecting data for an agency.
That's what we speculated.
Oh, gosh.
The Illuminati.
Yeah. But
the man in
no
black.
Indication what agency it is. It's just...
Well, the little bit that I've read, that they've talked about some more reveal and big twists. And the only thing I've mentally, just, you know, without going into spoilers, have been thinking about is Bay does not know what happened to his mother. And Bay does not know that Rumpel killed his mother. And so I'm betting that there's it's going to be a scene in these next few episodes where Neil confronts Hook, or Neil and Hook are face to face and Gold is in the room. And Hook says what happened to Mila, that Hook tells Bay, your father ripped your mother's heart out and crushed it right in front of my own eyes.
That would be traumatic.
Wow.
Yeah. That would twist that whole potential reconciliation up into a million pieces. So,
gosh, James in the chat room has a remark about this torture scene. He says, "You know, could this be the electroshock like the one that we see in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which was referenced by Chief and the nurse in the insane asylum that held Belle?" Ooh, right. That's a long time ago since I watched that. Huh.
But they do like that.
Yeah.
That theme of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. We see that a lot.
Yeah.
So there's no real indication yet as far as what kind of agency they're working for.
It sounds to me almost like the magical equivalent of the Man in Black that try to, you know, control, in this case, not aliens, but the presence of all these magical people in the world.
And what does Tamara mean with magic is unholy? That's what the first thing she says in the teaser. Magic is unholy.
Mm. So it could be some kind of religious quest to...
The difference between science and magic?
Science, magic, Scientology. Oh, we'll see. Oh boy. Well, interesting. It definitely got me intrigued for the finale, and I'm interested again. Even though this felt still to me a little bit like filler. I think with our discussion, there are still there are some layers in this story that I didn't think of myself. So, with that, I think it is time to wrap up the show and thank my co-hosts Inga, Shelley, Lisa, and Deborah for their presence. And we will be back, as promised, for the next two episodes with our analysis of the two, I guess they're basically two finale episodes of Once Upon a Time. And who knows what is going to happen and where they are going to bring this story and what the cliffhanger will be. We'll all discover it very soon. Thanks for listening. God bless, and see you on SQPN.com.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.